Right, here we go again. We're back with another weekly Sheep Farm podcast, hosted on your very own bullshit platform with my large nostrilled brother, as usual.
Good afternoon.
Get rid of him. Yeah, good afternoon.
Is that me?
No, not you. You're not meant to be here now, Jake.
Oh, sorry.
I'm joking. The format is simple. We release a minimum 4 shows a month. Members get the full podcast plus download. Non-members get part one plus download. All new shows are released on Saturdays, always on our private platform at sheepfarm.co.uk. But we also put them out on Podomatic that distribute them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, and Tapple if you're from Yorkshire. Please subscribe to the website for email notifications for all new shows and join us on Instagram where you can DM Chris. You thought DM were Danger Mouse. Who at DM?
I'm getting more messages now. It gets quite hard to keep up with, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
What, you get all right. Your day?
Yeah.
Thanks for buying supplements from Health Bunker. Use a promo code, please. Chris's Gaping Gobs on Etsy. His strange sculptures. That's it. We're also planning another live show, not just in the north.
Trying to plan one.
We're starting to plan one in central London, a club in there. And we're penciling in the dates around September 27th or October the 4th, both Saturdays,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it'll be a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it'll be Saturday afternoon, probably 3 hours, 4 hours. In Saturday afternoon in central London. So if you're interested in the central London one, I know people have been asking us to go further down south, email us in, and if we get enough interest, then we'll book this place in central London.
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah, we're only in the early stages. But
yeah, we're very early
feedback,
stages.
Feedback of it.
And Chris is organising it, so anything could happen.
First older brother put down of the evening, lunchtime, she does her.
Oh, no, that's the second one. I mentioned your nostrils earlier.
All right, yeah.
Yeah. We're only 2 minutes in. Come on. Yeah. Today's guest was introduced to us by Trevor John, although I've been watching his podcast, and Chris has been watching his podcast for quite a while, and you'll have heard him in the background there, jumping in with us.
Wasn't me.
Yeah. It's Jake Fern. How are you doing, Jake?
I'm all right. I'm really good. Yeah.
Good afternoon,
nice to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on.
Nice to have you.
I've been watching your concept on YouTube, and it's quite a fascinating concept. It's good to bring something new to the party, if you like, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. It was my wife's idea. This is like a running joke now, because everyone keeps going up to her, going, like, congratulating her. She's getting all the sort of kudos for it.
Right. So she should.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I was just trying to work out what to do. So for anyone listening, it's basically I interview people whilst painting them. Yeah. So I paint a portrait, and it's quite a long format. It takes about 4 or 5 hours, and we chat. And I think so far we've had, well, it started with David Icke.
Yeah.
So we managed to get David through Jackie Devoy, who Jackie Devoy people might have heard of her. She's done a lot of work with the care homes during COVID, the lockdowns, and
why what happened there, Jake? I can't remember.
Well, it passed me by, but apparently some people stayed indoors for a while.
Ah, right.
And had stuck a rag in front of their face, and took something else, which probably a lot worse than both of those things. Mm. So Jackie was sort of exposing some of the stuff that was going on in the care homes. And she happened to come to one of our gigs because I'm in a band as well. And we do, that's sort of how I know Trevor, I suppose, mainly through the music. And she came to a gig, and then we sort of became friends. And then she got a little black book out and said, "Who else do you want on your podcast?" She said, "Do you want David Icke?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, go on then, why not?" And because I've known David Icke stuff for donkey's years. I mean, I was lucky. I had a friend who bought 10 copies of The Truth Will Set You Free back in, I must have been 97 or 98. And and I read it, and that changed my life, initially for the worse. Yeah. Because it was a hard sort of process. It can be a hard process when you see things differently to that extent suddenly.
Just a bit.
Yeah, just a bit. And anyway, so we got David, Jackie DeVoy came, and she got a black book out, started getting all these numbers in, Matt Letizier. And then once you've got someone like David Icke on board, then other people are like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll do that. You know, it's obviously kind of legit. You know, it's like not just some chance of like doing a doodle and waffling on. So, yeah, it's been really good. We've had Tanya Edwards, comedian. We did Trevor John, actually. That went out last week. Mm. Matt Letizia, David Icke, Bob Moran, Robin Minotti. I'm sort of forgetting a few, but yeah, it's been really good. It's been really interesting for me to meet all these people.
I suppose being an artist, it changes the concept of doing what you do as well, doesn't it? Because I wouldn't have thought you'd normally talk that much.
Yeah, you don't. No, you don't. You don't normally talk. So it was a real, when Vicky suggested it, I just knew it was a great idea. And you don't have any, that might reservations not work. Or that. You don't have any reservations. Yeah. It was just like, bang, yeah, I knew that was right. It felt right in my gut.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise how difficult it would be.
Yeah.
Because it is I know I've always listened to podcasts and stuff while I'm painting, but I've never really chatted while I'm painting. And I assumed, wrongly, that it was kind of the same part of the brain. But it's not. It's a separate part of the brain. When you actually try and construct a conversation or in response to, your feedback on the conversation, that's a different, it's different to just listening. I have struggled with that a bit, trying to get a good painting and concentrate on the conversation. But I think that's part of what's sort of engaging about it, because you sort of, you walk in a tightrope in a way, you know, and sometimes it doesn't come out too well. And people like that as well. I'm not precious about, you know.
Christian's a bit of an artist, and his wife, she's
doing an art course. Your sculptures.
Yeah, they're weird, aren't they?
Mm. I haven't slept well since.
I've made them for years. I like drawing and painting as well. I've not done any painting for years. I used to run a life drawing class, actually. Yeah, Jack.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I used to manage a cafe because I'm a chef by trade. And in the evening it was empty, and I used to rent it out. I just got a life drawing model.
Yeah.
And then everyone just came and,
Well, he calls them life drawing, I see. Well, he dragged crackheads in off street, paint the knackers.
No, that's not what I did.
Naked crackheads, yeah.
There's definitely a Big Brother dynamic going on here, isn't there?
No, he's a knobhead, Jack. That's the best way to telling my brother that I do a life drawing classes. You know, you might as well just be talking to I don't even know.
Neanderthal.
Neanderthal. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah,
is that you? Did you do the drawing behind you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm not trying to show that off, by the way, Jake. We're doing a life drawing. We're doing a life gig up north. And I got this big thing printed out, and I just arrived today, so I've unravelled it to show Dom.
Oh, lovely! But, it's very good.
And then I was going to take it down, and I thought I want to leave it up to show my daughter when she comes home from school before I unravel it all. So very that's nice. Why it's there.
Yeah, yeah. All that crap in background is like what goes through our head.
Yeah.
Well, it is what goes through our head.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway.
I listened to your I listened to the Trevor John one last, and I've listened to the Richard Vobes one, David Icke, and a few of us. Yeah, they're really good. I mean, I listen to them in the shed when I'm doing my sculptures, when I'm painting them.
And, right.
It's a very relaxing format, isn't it?
It's very. It's
just, there's no rush. It feels very tranquil. It's a nice listen.
My friend came up to me and said, "I love listening to it when I go to sleep."
Yeah.
Is
that a compliment?
I think it was. Yeah. She genuinely meant it. She said she'll have to listen to it again the next day. But
I admit I listened to one of yours the other day when I couldn't sleep, and I didn't take a word of it in and thought I'd listen to it tomorrow. Brilliant.
All right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of subliminal messaging going on in there that we put
Well,
in
yeah, we're all shills, aren't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, oh, God, I'm a shill.
I thought I had some strange dreams.
I'm a NASA shill because I don't think the Earth is flat.
Yeah, well, we're all big shills. I mean,
but we can get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah, that's an interesting.
What did you think? What did you say then? Sorry, Jay. You think it's flat, or you don't think it's flat?
No, I'm a NASA shill because I'm paid by NASA to promote the globe. Because
all right,
I don't think it's flat.
Yeah. ain't got a clue, if I'm honest. I'd never describe myself as a flat earther, because that just causes too much trouble in my own mind, never mind anyone else's.
But that's not because I would say I don't trust what we've been told. So it's probably something totally different to what anybody's thinking.
Might be a blancmange.
Yeah, it might be.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, that was the lesson that when I first read Ike, 28 years ago. Yeah. And then you question everything. And that's the healthy starting point. You just question everything. That's your default position. I'm not going to believe anything. And I always say, if everyone woke up tomorrow and just decided they'd only act on what they could verify for themselves.
Yes.
The world would change overnight. It would just change completely. Because there's so much damage done in the name of belief, unverified belief and belief systems. So the flat earth thing is interesting because it's not for me a debate about whether it's flat or round. It's about how we, the thing that interests me most is how we can communicate about this thing that we disagree with.
Yes.
And I think that says more about where we're at. And I was talking to my friend the other day and he said, I've heard you say you think the flat earth thing discredits the movement. And he started talking about the movement and he said, but are you part of a movement? I mean, what is a movement? I'm not part of a movement. Saying to me, yeah. And he's sort of right. And I take it on board. I think there is part of me that feels attached to this thing that I think of as a movement. I mean, the word movement, you can take that in different ways. You can say movement as in a political movement where it's, people have almost signed up for something. That's a very specific kind of thing. Or a movement in the sense of a wave in the sea that's just things moving. And that's perhaps more how I see it. It's just when
fluid.
I talk about a movement.
Fluid.
It's just a fluid. It's just a movement of people towards, I think, a greater understanding or a better relationship with truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's ultimately what we're all about, is moving towards truth. But the
truth is really not harming others, isn't it? Really, everything we humans should do is not to harm, but benefit others.
Others
or the intention,
others and oneself together. Yes. Because we're all part of So that it's not just selfless. It's you and everyone, and that's absolutely. And that's the simplest way to look at it, and that's how I look at it. Is be good. Be the best you can be. Be the nicest, kindest person you can be. But that's a complex question. Because
I have an issue with all dogmas as well, because things turn into a dogma. No matter what it is, whether you've been told to believe climate change is man-made, whether you've been told 9/11 happened with it, where everything becomes that. So I have a problem, even with conspiracy things that you're told, if you don't believe in that, then you're not a real truther. I have a problem with that part as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've found. And this is part of what I'm interested in exploring, especially with the podcast and everything. Mm. Like the one with Trevor was great because he calls himself a globe skeptic.
That's a good way to describe it.
Actually, that's where I am. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get that. And that's, now this can sound patronizing. It's not, I don't mean it at all like this.
I'll take it that way, though.
But you can take it like that and just tell me to fuck off. But that's how I would have described myself 2 years ago. I was agnostic. I was open-minded. I looked at I'll look at everything. I went through an experience back after I read Ike. There was a few years where I let go of pretty much everything, and it was really
it's tough,
hard.
Isn't it? It's tough.
It was really hard. Yeah. And I've got no interest, like you, in dogma, in belief, in anything. And I've got no attachment to globe, flat, anything.
No, so I don't either.
So I got to the point where I had friends talking about it. It became, I mean, the first time I heard it was about 2015 in the kind of truth of circles, and I kind of dismissed it, but I didn't ridicule it. I was just like, I don't think so. And then I had friends who really got into it, and I sort of kept an open mind. And then I started looking at stuff, and I was looking at, well, actually, you can see further than you think. And, oh, well, there are some
aspects
compelling
to it.
Sort of
there is
compelling arguments on a certain level. And I'd sort of gone along perhaps for about a year, year and a half. And I remember walking with my dad and sort of half mentioning it. And my dad's kind of like the litmus test. And he's quite open-minded and he knows where I stand on most things. But I also, he's sort of like a mirror in a way. If I think of talking about something to my dad, I kind of need to know my shit. So I need to believe what I believe. I need to know what I'm saying. I can't just... He's not going to just go, oh, yeah, all right. You know, he's going to like look at me and go, what, really, you believe that? And it's a good kind of, yeah, litmus test of like how much I really believe something. And I really got close to the point of not calling myself a flat earther, but I was really open to it. And I was following quite a lot of the people on YouTube. Paul on the Plane was one that I used to watch, and a few of the others. And then I just thought, okay, right, if I'm going to talk to my dad about this, if I'm actually going to come out and say I think the earth is flat, I really need to know what I'm saying. I really need to have good evidence. So I thought, okay, I'm really going to dive into this. I had it was my little project that, you know, that I just dive into. When I'm painting, I listen to stuff, so I can listen for hours, you know.
I do the same,
yeah. Yeah. And... honestly, look, I can only speak for myself, but it took me about 2 weeks of solid listening to debates, watching stuff on both sides. And before long I was convinced that it was every flat earth argument was flawed.
Well,
go on.
If going back to the being called a NASA shill, I don't believe NASA.
Probably more appropriate.
I struggle with the moon landings to the point where I don't actually think we've ever been there. Now, that doesn't mean to say that I have to think that what people are telling me about the shape of the Earth. However, I do like the concept of a bigger Earth than we're being told, that there's more to it than that. I do like, but these are concepts and theories. They're not actual.
I entertain that. Yeah, I understand that. But the thing is, when we start talking like that, and this is exactly, yeah, again, I don't want to sound like, well, that's what
but
I
these are concepts,
think,
aren't
know.
They? These
but,
are concepts.
But they are concepts. Yeah. They're concepts and theories. But, you know, so that's fine. Like, I've got loads of friends who are kind of in that agnostic sort of position. And we just get on fine. But it's when, again, it's like you say, when it becomes a dogma and people say, right, I know it's this, or it's definitely this, I think you really have to know what you're talking about. And it's okay to say, yeah, it might be bigger. I mean, I personally think, having looked at it and really watched a lot of the kind of the mainstream stuff going back, because I know people think, this is the thing, people think because they've been brought up with the conditioning, they think that they have almost... you know, to counteract that, then you just go wholeheartedly into the opposite kind of camp.
Yeah.
What you have to do really is reevaluate the information that you've been told in the conditioning and sort of look at it and go, okay, well, that's probably not all lies. It's like it wouldn't wash if it was all lies. So you have to go back and go, okay, well, what if that is true?
Well, that's like saying, I don't believe in oxygen. Oh,
yes, exactly. And I've used that exact example.
I don't believe in water. Oh.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, Dharma. That's exactly. I've said that so many times because people say, well, it's all lies. Everything you've been told is a lie. Well, yeah. Are you breathing oxygen? Now, that's not to say we know exactly what oxygen is.
It's a bit like people who are into, say, eugenics, for argument's sake.
Yeah.
I have the conversation with people and, oh, all eugenics is bad. But not all eugenics, they're not doing eugenics to create problems. They're looking for something that creates a solution to some plan they've got for themselves, i.e.
Right.
longevity or whatever it might
be. Right, yeah.
So they're going to find things that work. Now, they're not going to publicize these things and tell you that they work. They're going to tell you that they poison you, for instance, you know?
Yeah.
Like we find that high doses of vitamin C help in from an IV form in our clinic help people with various illnesses and conditions. Yeah. If they're not going to come out and tell you that, you know, but they're not going to make it illegal either, otherwise they can't use it. But anyway.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. But I started really latching onto the idea of the second matrix.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I just think is really something that needs to be kind of fleshed out. And it's in every aspect of the kind of conspiratorial alternative movement. I think what happens is people they wake up, whatever that word means.
Yeah, whatever it means. Yeah,
whatever it means. And I don't like it. I don't really like it. But shorthand, it kind of, okay, you kind of wake up out of a spell, I suppose. You know, you start questioning stuff.
Yeah.
And then waiting for you is this whole mess of wriggly, wormy kind of conspiratorial stuff.
Shite.
There's a whole load of stuff that's thrown into the mix to just capture you again.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's like a second sieve as you're falling through to kind of freedom. There's another kind of mesh of stuff, and it's a bit more complex, and it's a bit more attractive, and it's a bit more, you know, and you can think you're sort of smart because you've seen through one, and then you get onto this, and it just it captures people, and it's in every aspect. And you know, I've been looking at natural health stuff for a long time, and there's a lot of stuff in there which you think, whoa, you know, be careful. Don't just do the, you know, it's like...
I get told by people, you need to do this for this. And I say, well, not everything works for everybody, you know.
Yeah.
I tried the, what's it called, the blue stuff. And it absolutely...
Methylene blue.
It absolutely destroyed me, honestly. It destroyed me.
That's amazing that you said that, because that's the one example, methylene blue.
Mm.
And it was really pushed about a year or two ago.
Mm.
And I know people taking it. In fact, I don't know whether I should say this. I had a good, my absolutely beautiful friend who died recently. Now, I am not at all saying it was because he was taking methylene blue.
Mm.
But he did take it for a while.
And well, I took it last year. And I've got a supplement business. And I was testing it out for myself, because I've got Lyme disease. I was recovering from Lyme disease.
Right, okay.
And so I thought, do you know what? I'll try this. And I made some capsules with the manufacturer, and I got the highest quality methylene blue powder. And
yeah.
People will say, oh, you need to try liquid. I tried them both. But after about a week of trying, it took me about a year to recover.
No.
Joint pain.
Really?
A lot of the symptoms that I had came back again.
What's it supposed to do, methylene blue?
Well, it's meant to detox you, which is what it does to a fish tank in a way. I mean, that's a general term anyway. Detox is one of them overused words. But but for some people, I'm sure it does bring benefits.
Maybe.
But it's not a carte blanche thing.
None of it is it?
No.
None of it is. And I think that's the danger. You know, it's a little bit of knowledge can be a dangerous thing.
For instance, we were taking, going back 7-10 years ago, me and my wife were taking a naturopath told us to take some sulfur capsules for detoxification.
Yeah, yeah.
And it were like kryptonite, honestly. I found out afterwards that I was susceptible to sulfur type products.
Right.
If you've got a genetic fault called the MTHFR gene, there are certain things.
Yeah, the motherfucker gene.
The motherfucker gene you should not be taking. And methylene blue is one of them.
Right.
So anything blue, what the motherfucker gene does, the MTHFR gene, it turns off your detox capabilities, apparently,
yes.
If this is true, right?
Yeah.
And so it stops your detoxing. So anything that, like sulfur and things like that, you can't handle.
Right,
anymore. And there's other things that it does as well, like turn food into energy and all this kind of, that's why people suffer with chronic fatigue. But anyway, we're not talking about that. But
no, but it's a good point. It's a really good point, yeah.
There is no carte blanche thing, is there?
No.
That's what we're trying to say. Yeah.
And even that, like, because we looked at all the MTHR, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because
even that's a minefield.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say. Because, you know, you kind of think you know, you think you know something, and you do a bit of research, and then everything is a minefield. You're just not sure, especially when you sort of bring in a child. You know, you have to be really sure. I mean, one thing I absolutely knew is that I wouldn't. Vaccines were out.
Yeah, but there's another side to vaccines. Even I would say, right?
Go on, this is interesting.
I would say all of this stuff, and people that you'd be going, oh no, this is bollocks.
No, go on.
Right, but if you think about it, there's always going to be a yin and a yang, right?
Yeah.
There's always going to be people that things harm and things that benefit people.
Yeah,
I personally think that part of this jab rollout was to see the benefits of the jab in certain individual bloodlines. maybe there are some people that are, we hear about all the bad news stories.
Mm.
We don't hear of anything positive.
Mm.
Now, people say there's nothing positive coming.
Well, yeah, people would
blah,
say
blah,
that,
blah.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm not saying there isn't. There might well not be.
Yeah.
But I would hazard a guess that there would be something. Maybe it turns something, someone into some kind of superhuman. Mentally or whatever. A bit like the sad case of all the autistic rates increasing.
Yeah.
Some of these people are highly intelligent individuals, more so than a normal average person on certain subjects.
Yeah.
That if you were going to develop something, you'd want that type of answer.
Yeah. The other side is though, Dom, we were all naturally becoming better, and they were trying to stop it.
Possibly, mentally aware type of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, changing maybe not into Superman, but maybe changing maybe that level of intelligence that some of these autistic people have, and maybe the whole of humanity was changing. That's what they were trying to abruptly stop, if you know what I mean.
Quite possibly. Yeah. Well, it certainly worked.
You know what? I just absolutely love that. Well, just that little exchange there where you're just saying, I don't know, but maybe this, maybe that. And I think that is so refreshing.
Yeah.
Like, to be able to just say, it's not black and white. Maybe it's not black and white. You know, maybe there's other things here that we're not even looking at that we don't know, that we can't see. And I just think that is so healthy. That's what a real truth seeker, that is what we should be about. And I think, you know, all this stuff is kind of just exploratory, you know, and all the theories and all this is, if we keep it in that kind of exploratory basket and we focus and we can do that at our leisure. We can explore all those things, but we keep as a focus, what is it that really is important? And as you said earlier, it's about being good, you know, and really that means being sovereign, doesn't it? That means being self-responsible and responsible for the whole. And really,
I think, Jack, if you're getting angry with someone about any of this stuff, you've been propagandized.
Yeah.
And going back to the flat earth thing, there's obviously some psychological operation there for some reason.
I think so.
And I'm not saying it's wrong or right, who knows, but none of us have the answers, do we? We're all just guessing and discussing.
We're sort of guessing, but I mean, so yeah, just going back to that for a second, you know, what people tend to do is, well, I can't, and this is what I would say. I'd say, well, I don't know because I haven't been up there.
Yes, that's what I say. Yeah.
And I think that's a totally valid point. Absolutely 100%. And I could have stayed at that point.
Katy Perry's been there though.
Yeah, well, I've got another podcast with her afterwards, actually. So I'll ask her.
But she'll mic and she'll camera out for
that. Yeah. And that's fine. But if you're starting to make claims, that's where it becomes a problem. And I think if you really want to know, there are things you can do to really know. And it's not about authority. So people say, oh, well, you just believe NASA, you believe this. There are lots and lots of experiments that you can do yourself using logical analysis, critical thinking, that very much point to the fact that we don't live on a flat plane, that we live. And, you know, I could go through them, but it's kind of pointless because those who are kind of stuck in a belief will just dismiss them. And I get this all the time. And they won't even discuss them rationally.
It's not just that one subject, is it? That one subject that we're talking
chemtrails,
about.
Chemtrails, viruses.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some pictures from yesterday that I took, a video of the sky, and I sent it to Chris. And it looks the weirdest sky I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a sky like that before.
Right.
And this is through... my son said that... My son's 13, and he said, they look like sound waves. But it went for, like, all the way across the sky. I'm going to put it on a full video. We'll have a talk about it on a live event. It's a strange phenomenon. Yeah. But chemtrails are another thing. We don't know what... Are they doing something? Yes. Is there some HAARP technology? Yes. Yeah. We know all about this stuff. Do we know exactly what it is? No.
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 Because
we we're not controlling. No. We haven't got the levers and buttons to press.
Exactly.
But the interesting side of the chemtrail discussion is that us lunatics have been talking about them for years, and now they've officially said they're going to do it. That is an interesting aspect.
What they've said is they're going to geoengineer.
Yeah.
And I think this is a subtlety that we need. We need to be critical and precise. You know, I think this problem when people aren't precise, so they start arguing over and they don't even, they're not even talking about the same thing. So chemtrails and geoengineering is sort of different, because by chemtrails, people tend to be referring to this idea that they're actually spraying us like bugs to keep us ill. Well, geoengineering, you know, creating clouds to block out the sun, is, they are sort of two separate things. Obviously, they're connected because they're both to do with plane trails. Mm. But one doesn't necessarily mean that the other is, if one is true, it doesn't mean the other is true, and vice versa, you know. So, I mean, I had a friend who, she's brilliant. I met her right at the start of lockdown. She's been instrumental in the whole Brighton Awake sort of scene and the protests and everything. But she just sort of came out, I don't know, a year or two ago, just expressing doubts about the idea that we were actually being sprayed to poison us. And the amount of vitriol she got, you know? And
well, I think conversation needs to be healthy conversation, as in... If somebody's trying to convince me, then I have an issue with that. If you're having a conversation and I can take bits away and I have a look at it myself, that's how it should go. When somebody tries to be...
Saying, if someone's getting angry with you to try and tell you one of these things that no one can actually know.
When somebody's on the soapbox trying to be one of those American preachers, an evangelist about a particular subject...
Yeah,
I mean, the facts are they have been spraying shit in the sky for a long, long time. Operation Cauldron is a well-known operation, over 800 operations from 1943 up to 1989. I'm sure it's continued since. Zinc, cadmium, and all the other stuff that they were dropping on people.
Another fact
that doesn't mean to say that they are that thing were chemtrails. They were doing it, but you know, anyway.
But another natural fact is that the skies have changed. There's something going on, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's definitely something going on. So, like, the most kind of forgiving explanation would be that there are more planes, at different altitudes, the fuel's different. You know, you could put forward a few we see more trails now than we did when we were kids. You know?
I would say though is
no, I'm not saying that's true.
Yeah, I know
I'm
that.
Just
I know
that's,
that.
That's
sort of like an argument against, isn't it? But what I would say is that when I were younger. And people say, oh, yeah, we're younger, though. You didn't take any notice. No, I actually did take notice of planes. I was interested in planes.
Yeah, yeah.
And contrails disappeared. I remember seeing them. I used to watch them. I used to lay and watch them, and they disappeared in the summer sky, if you like.
And they were at a certain height as well. In fact, they were really high.
Well, I don't know either way.
I remember one of our mates telling me, when we were just lying at grass watching them, only at a certain, he knew more than me, a certain height where...
The water
evaporates, and then you've got that little trail behind it.
Yeah,
but
they slowly disappear.
But these things get
wider.
But like Jake said, it could be a change in fuel. That could be an explanation if it was to be explained away. But no one's trying to explain it away.
No. But on another level, that change in fuel, someone else knows that when they change the fuel, these things don't go away and they do a different. So the person putting the fuel in the plane. Just thinks it's new unleaded super plane fuel.
Yes, well, that's another possibility. Yeah,
yeah,
eco fuel.
Yeah, eco. So the pilot and everybody else haven't a clue.
Yes, totally. But these are all things that I suppose what it is. And again, it's like the flat Earth thing. You know, if you don't know, don't let fear overtake you.
No,
you know, that's the thing. That's what I find is this kind of.
A bit like Jake, plastic in the sea. We've seen Lewis Hamilton with his glue-on Rastafarian wig picking bottles up on the beach and stuff, saying, oh, there's plastic in this. But if plastic comes from oil and they're testing the sea, where they're drilling for oil anyway, and if they're only testing for one, say, a couple of elements that are in oil, that's going to be in seawater anyway.
Yeah.
This microplastic nonsense as well is probably nonsense.
It could well be. I mean, maybe it's something in the processing of it that causes harm. But you're right. Everything is natural, ultimately.
Yeah. Ultimately,
there's so much there's a lot of fear, and it does the kind of cliche of the paranoid conspiracy theorist, you know, there is some kind of truth to that. And you know, I used to get pretty annoyed when you'd hear these COD psychologists in the mainstream sort of describing all conspiracy theorists as, well, they just want to be special. They want to think they know something that other people don't know. And generally, that isn't the case. And it is a way of dismissing us. And it's wrong. But there is actually, in my opinion, there is an element of truth to that in some respects with some people, that it does become another belief system which gives them a kind of identity that they that they're attached to.
It's a difficult thing to step away, because what is real? You know, you could say, well, I step away from this and then I go to my real life, a type of thing. But what is that? Is that the real life? Not quoting a Queen song.
Yeah.
Are we all living in Grand Theft Auto? We don't know, do we? We don't know.
Simulation theory, yeah, the whole thing. You know, the whole thing. But ultimately, for me, it always comes down to simple, I'm here, so I'm part of whatever it is, and my gut says this is good, and my gut says this is not good. And I try and keep it simple now.
Yeah. I think that's another thing, Jet. People don't listen to their instincts enough these days. Instead of just, you know, when you're going on about the argument between this and that, you just vision yourself walking through a field, don't you? It doesn't have to affect me if I don't want it to affect me on a daily basis, you know?
Yeah.
It's like when you listen to, I was listening to a thing today and it was about, you know, how bad England's got. And I'm thinking, so from foreign people's point of view, England's, you know, knife crime's rife.
Yeah.
You get arrested.
Everyone's running around with a sword.
Yeah, exactly. And they've done that before. That's regurgitated from 20 odd years ago. But I'm sat in my little shed doing something, and I'm thinking, well, I'm not witnessing any of this stuff of how bad England's become.
Yeah.
So you do have to take a step back and go.
Yeah, but you're working from GCHQ.
Well, there is that. Yeah. Count me briefcase full of cash.
Yeah. Your shill case.
Shill. Mm.
But that's a new phenomenon as well, isn't it? Before we start, I want to talk about 2020 and all that as well. But that's a new phenomenon. The people who do a podcast, all of a sudden, I mean, I know Chris, I can speak for Chris. I'm not doing this to get followers. I'm not interested in getting followers. I'm doing it because I'm interested in talking about these subjects and doing research into what I do research into. I'm interested in it. It intrigues me. I have all my heart and soul, if you like. I can easily step away from it, but step back from it and be realistic about it all as well. But there are a lot.
Are you talking about people accusing you of being a grifter? Is that what you mean?
Exactly. A grifter, a shill, whatever. Yeah. Let me tell you something. I'm from a business background. If I wanted to earn money, I wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, right.
What did you do before the 1,000-word thing, Jack?
I'm a portrait painter, so that's what I do.
Right.
But it was lockdown that really got me into
angry.
That. Well, yeah. Well, it was a blessing. It's a gift that keeps giving, really. Because I lost my work that I was doing. And then I thought, well, what do I love doing? I hadn't painted for ages. And then I just dived into it completely. And I had the time because the grifter thing. I mean, it's like Trevor says. Trevor's very good like this. He says, well...
Trevor's a grifter.
He's a grifter. He's admittedly a grifter. He says, well, we get accused of being grifters, but, you know, we've got to earn a living. And if we'd love doing what we'd love doing what we're doing, people like it, then it's all right for people to pay. We get subscriptions or whatever. You got to put food on the table.
It's funny that it's all right for Gary Lineker to earn 30 million a year.
On
BBC.
Talking about football. Yeah.
It's all right for all those television broadcasters to lie through 2020 and beyond.
Yeah.
And get paid ridiculous amounts of money. But you have a t-shirt shop like we do.
Yeah, no. No, because it's just choice, isn't it? It's like, okay, well, it keeps it going and everything. And you got to pay.
I think it's fantastic what's happened over the last 5 years.
I think it's created its own little industry.
Which is people can choose what they support and what they consume. Exactly. Whereas before we were just forced to consume whatever were around. And now people have got a massive choice, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's all good. I mean, I think the definition of grifter for me is someone who is peddling bullshit.
Yeah.
And they don't believe. I really think that does happen. I mean, it happens, say, like, well, in various forms, but I remember when I've looked at diet and I was following vegans and carnivore and all this kind of, you know, you follow all these sort of extreme diets. There were a lot of vegans who got caught eating meat and they had huge vegan channels on YouTube, and they were caught. And I sort of feel for them in a way, because they built up this business believing what they were doing, probably well-meaning at the start, you know, like, I'm going to promote this. And, it's helping me get a bit of money. They probably didn't start out as like as cynical. I'm just going to build this thing and I've always eaten meat. I don't believe it. No. They believed it. And then perhaps they have a health crisis and they go, oh, actually, I really need to eat some meat. But I've got this business, I've got a mortgage, I've got kids, you know.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes grifting.
There's a famous guy called the Liver King.
The Liver King.
Oh, God, it's grotesque.
Made out that he'd just eaten liver to get... I mean, I'm into bodybuilding. A lot of my mates took steroids, and I knew straight away we're taking steroids. I could tell.
Everyone was saying.
I didn't. I don't know anything about it.
But millions of people believed all he ate was liver.
Put a shirt on, man. Put a shirt on. No need to see a man's naked body that much. I don't care how muscular you are. Just put a shirt on.
Yeah. But it sells. It sells, doesn't it? He was quite extreme, wasn't he?
But it's strange, though, that the vegan thing is very similar to what we were talking about, the earth thing.
Oh, totally, yeah. They're all still the same.
People became nearly vigilantes.
Angry about it.
But I always say about...
Oh, I've lost you,
Dom. I talk about diet. It's whatever works for you.
Mm.
Whatever keeps you healthy is the diet. There isn't a diet. It's whatever keeps you healthy. And I tend to stick to a stricter end of keto.
Yeah.
Simply because it worked for me. I tried a lot of other things and it worked for me through health conditions and what have you.
Yeah.
But I can only say that works for me. I've seen my wife, she didn't do like I do. She's more paleo. So everyone's built different.
Yeah, yeah.
And there isn't one, if somebody says to you, this one thing works for everybody, then I'm sorry, it doesn't.
Well, the interesting thing there, because I've been getting into ancient aliens and all that kind of stuff. And
well, I love all that subject. Yeah,
because I find the Old Testament fascinating and I just sort of did a deep dive into that. And
that's Chris's subject.
Oh, is it?
He likes all that stuff, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because that's another part of the second matrix is the absurd of sort of dogmatic Christianity, and I think that's quite dangerous. And I've got friends who have gone down that road, and it's really getting a grip on people. And there's a lot of beauty and truth in Christ's message, and I'm actually drawn. My whole life I've been drawn to the figure of Christ, but I think I've always known that religion as a dogma is dangerous, and I think this is just another form of cult mindset, same as scientism and the same as flat earth. Let's show both sides, because scientism can be a cult. And flat, you know, and kind of rejection of science can also be a cult. You know, the middle line is usually the way of some, you know, taking what's true.
Well, even the word agnostic came from Thomas Huxley. He came up with the term agnostic.
Right.
So
meaning not knowing, or
yeah, exactly, yeah. So he was obviously a pusher of the Darwinism, etc.
Sure. Yeah.
Everything's going to be questioned. As soon as you say I'm an agnostic now, and you look at Huxley's background and what that family were into. Yeah. You've got to question most things. That doesn't mean to say they were wrong, by the way, but there's certainly a question mark there.
Yeah, yeah. I just lost my thread, but what I was going to say was going back to the ancient alien stuff, and we're talking about diet. And, you know, for years I was like, why, you know, people talk about ancestral diet, and I was like, well, why don't we know what to eat? Why is it so complicated, you know? And you'd think it'd be pretty straightforward, wouldn't you, really?
Mm.
But, you know, now I'm starting to think, actually, maybe we're not really native.
I'm 100% on that one.
You know, and
we don't belong here.
Well, I wouldn't maybe go that far personally. I kind of, because I think, as we said earlier, everything.
All right,
is natural.
Boris Johnson don't belong here.
He don't belong here. But I don't know what he is. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, everything I suppose is where it's meant to be in that respect. That I don't, because again, that can feed the kind of alienation and the disconnect. I think we are all part of God's creation, and that we're here. So we're here. That's fine. That's cool. But whether we're actually designed to be here fully, I'm not sure. And the question is, who's God? I just mean, that's a really loaded term, isn't it? But I use it because I kind of like the simplicity of it.
It's a general term, isn't it?
I don't even like the creator, because I don't even necessarily believe there was a creation. I think maybe everything has always been and there is no time. And, you know, you get into a whole kind of thing.
It'd be horrible to think that somebody like some coding experts coding this simulation sat in his, I don't know,
well, someone must have created him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So
who created the creator? The creator.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. In so, the creator. Yeah.
And then you just get into the sort of infinite kind of loop, which is fine. That's
I would say this. My personal belief is there's some level of design element to us.
Oh, for sure.
To the place where we live, because I mean, the way that the plants and the animals up to humans. All interact is that it's not by circumstance, not by can't be.
No.
That's only my opinion. Maybe
well, this
it's
is
a bit, it's a bit.
No, like, go on.
You're the guest, I'm interrupting you. Go on,
go on.
It's a bit like when I do the sort of bloodline links back to a lot of the famous families and stuff like that. People think, well, it's because of their bloodline that they've been chosen. I think there's more to it than just having that bloodline, if you like.
Right,
I think there's an energetic part to it. That. They can be easily trained to carry out what Boris Johnson or Tony Blair carry out.
Well, if you're going back to the ancient alien stuff, then there could well be genetic differences that have carried through, you know, so apparently there's that, you know, in the Old Testament, it talks about God debating with himself how intelligent to make humans and, you know, and those stories are echoed in
that
the
sounds like AI, doesn't it?
Sumerian. Well, yeah, but what I've really got into is this idea that basically the Old Testament is quite an accurate history, which has been changed, but it's quite an accurate history, a collection of stories that portray the colonization of Earth by non-earthly entities, and that kind of makes a lot of sense. So a lot of the stories in the Old Testament basically mimic the Sumerian, the Babylonian, the other story, and they talk about multiple gods arguing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So one of these stories, I think it was Enki and somebody, they're kind of arguing and they're saying they don't know how intelligent to make humans, and they don't know how to make how subservient to make humans. And one of them saying, well, we should make them in our equal to us in intelligence, and the other one's going, no, they can't be as intelligent as us. And this is all to do with gold mining and the idea that we were created to be gold miners, basically, for their project, but it does raise the question. Well, maybe some of us are more subservient because of that. You know, because we've all been asking, haven't we, for 5-6 years?
The slave gene.
Why do some of us get it?
Yeah,
the slave gene. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Might have been batch one and batch two.
Well, Mark one like a Mark one escort.
The funny thing is, Jack, that I agree with it. There's a lot of truth in the Bible. It's probably quite historic, but then. Someone's got this Bible that they can use to control the rest of humanity, and then they're going to use it, aren't they? So that hence,
they won't use it. They're all nice people.
Hence, there's loads of books missing from the Bible.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, I've got one here. I've got the Book of Enoch here.
Thomas Enoch. Enoch's got the extraterrestrial flight, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't he go up in a spaceship basically?
Yeah.
But it's the real translation.
But why take it out though?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, totally. Why did they take it? Oh no, it's been. And they've changed the translation from the Spirit of God, actually translated means the heavy machine of God and these kind of things. I mean, that might not be exactly true, but if you look at the actual original translation, the Spirit of God isn't some kind of nebulous thing. It's like this big heavy machine, i.e. a UFO.
I heard the other day that something I'd not heard before, that apparently I forget where I heard it, and I'll listen to something I'm shared. The Ethiopian Bible is the one that's got all the books in. I was going to order one because I didn't know that.
Yeah,
because they always just said the St. James, but apparently that's been tampered with recent years. So they say get the Ethiopian one. It's got all the old books. I think 80 books in it or something. 88 books in it or something.
Yeah,
which is interesting. Why Ethiopia? Why?
Well, there's a whole load of stuff you can get into there, which I don't know that much about.
I've got this book here actually talking about that. This is where I started a lot of my conspiratorial thought process. Was reading Eric von Daniken.
Absolutely, yeah. It was on my mum and dad's bookshelf when I was a kid.
Because it was massive in the 60s and 70s, and it kind of got forgotten about, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like I said, I think he were onto something. I'm not saying he was 100% everyone's... like the ancient aliens thing. Everything's an alien, but he's definitely onto something, the way that the Bible describes stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But when guys like that were writing books, people can look back at them now and sort of ridicule them. But... he was at that point, wasn't he? He didn't have all the armoury that we have.
And, well, he didn't have the internet.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got bloody hell. Yeah, imagine.
Insane,
yeah, imagine.
It's insane what we can get.
Yeah. And he always says as well. He always says it's a theory. He never. I don't think. I haven't read him for years and years. I think I've picked this blooming old one up somewhere.
Yeah.
He didn't. He didn't say this is a fact. He always says it's a theory.
I think that's the difference. Going back to people believing in dogmas and things. Well, if we say something on this podcast, for instance, people will think that's what we actually believe in.
Even right.
Like I said all the way through that this is a theory, this concept, whatever.
Yeah.
We actually know this or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It will still take some, and like if they watch a TV program like that. What was that program that were out the other week that everyone was talking about that white kid that stabbed that young girl?
Oh yeah.
People will believe that's real. Yeah.
Documentary on Keir Starmer.
It doesn't matter how many times. You tell somebody it's just a concept, they'll think that's what you actually think.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous, that's a dangerous part.
It is. People sort of weaponize their own thought processes.
Yes.
They're their own worst enemy in a way. They're almost looking for, I suppose it all boils down to trauma and trying to heal trauma. So we're all traumatized and we're trying to, in some form, replay those conflicts so that we can resolve them.
Yeah.
So that's why all this stuff comes up. And this is, you know, people accuse people are being shills or whatever. It's usually just a kind of projection of their own insecurities about their own thought processes. So,
And also being open, having this sort of open mindset where you're willing to discuss things, right? For instance, I'll go back to vitamin C. It doesn't work for everybody in the same way that it works. But I'm quite happy that it worked for me, right? It helps me. Now, that doesn't mean to say that if somebody said it didn't work for me, I'd sort of argue with them.
Yeah, right.
It does. You did it wrong and you didn't do it right.
Yeah,
you didn't believe in the vitamin C for it not to work and all this type of stuff. You've got to accept that something else might work for someone else. And likewise, with all this dogmatic approach of every subject that we've been covering here in this, whatever, 45 minutes chinwag, that everything's open because tomorrow we might close the book and say, we were wrong in all of that.
Totally.
Really, that.
Except for everything I've said, obviously.
Yeah, oh, everything you've said. Yeah. And the comment I made about his nostrils, that's true. But yeah, it's a bit like, I don't know where you start. You say you started reading David Icke. In my sort of world, I started reading JFK books in the like late 80s and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And if I look back at what I looked at there, I could tell that the whole thing wasn't what we were told.
Yeah.
I had a totally different concept of what it was then as to what I do now, if you get 30, 40 years on or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And likewise, if you read David Icke's book now, you'd have a different view of what that was. So you've got to be willing to accept that you're going to change.
Yeah.
But it's seen as a weakness, isn't it? That type of mindset.
Well, again, it goes back to wanting to control reality. You know, you people, I mean, it's basic psychology, isn't it? I suppose we want it. Human beings want to be in control of their environment. They want to be when they get up in the morning, they want to know what they've got to do. They want to know, well, you know, we haven't got a field to sow anymore and crops to grow, but we've got these kind of thoughts. Yeah. We want some kind of security in what we believe. So
we want to know that Monster Munch are good for us.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I can understand why people don't like, not knowing. I think the difference is if you've got a foundation, like a faith in the goodness of the universe, from that foundation, you can explore quite more comfortably, more securely, the different options. But if you're if you fundamentally haven't asked some of the deep questions, existential questions about who you are, then you probably latch onto an identity. And then when you latch onto an identity, when someone challenges that, you get scared and angry. That's kind of how I see it. So
one of the biggest slaps around the face is that most of the things that go wrong in your own life is your fault.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And if you can't accept that, then you're not going to be able to move on from anything else.
And that attracts, that kind of mindset can attract people into the conspiratorial world. Because it's very easy to point the finger at them.
Yes.
And not look at... And I think, actually, that's... I mean, with the podcast, that's... If I'm sort of, like, trying to promote anything, it's just that that idea that we are all responsible for what's happening. It's like, I always, even with the guests, if they talk about them, I'm like, well, is it us and them, or are we all sort of in some kind of cosmic drama where we're kind of playing a part? And it, because I think what the us and them thing does is enables people to sit back into this.
It's a cop out.
It's a bit of a cop out, isn't it, really? Yeah, people, that's not to say there aren't power structures out
exactly.
there.
Yeah, because we know there are.
Yeah.
And just like what you said, people want the life in a nice little bone and all that type of stuff. You know, that's given to you, isn't it? It's like a, there's your cookie cutter, you know.
Yes.
Watch the news at 10 o'clock and that'll tell you the truth. Go to the cinema and watch this film and that'll sort of do this for you. They've got to control the lot. Everything, all of that is controlled and packaged for the consumer.
But then the second Matrix comes in and says, oh, these are the baddies. These are the goodies.
Yes.
And it replaces, you know, people latch onto that. And that's just as dangerous, you know.
Yeah, let's have a look at that. So if you think about it, are some of these people that are controlling this where we are today, this realm, trying to fight against the controllers of the sort of the real controllers, if you like, or the alternative controllers, whatever you want to call them, of the second Matrix?
Right.
There's a high possibility that they know the secrets. That's what they're all the Masonic or whatever you want to call it, ritualistic, satanic type.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think that it's more fluid than it's often portrayed.
Mm.
You know, I'm not going to say there are white hats, you know, all that kind of, I'm not going to get into all that. I follow.
But even then, Jake, right, the white hats, forget the white hats and all that QAnon nonsense. However, if these people were that evil, if Tony Blair and again, people say, oh, you've been slagging Tony Blair and all these people off for years, now you're going to say they're actually not that bad. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But if these people actually wanted to stamp all over us, why don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a good question. You know, I think we have to be flexible in our thinking.
Yes. And that's not me saying that they are good people, by the way, but there's a reason why.
No, but you have to add that caveat, don't you, Dom?
Yes, you have.
And I can see, because I find myself doing the same. That's not to say I'm saying that we shouldn't even have to add that caveat.
No, because you're having a conversation.
Because you're having a conversation, you know? And I just think if we can sort of mature the, let's call it a movement for want of a better word, if we can be better examples of people who are just willing to explore reality in true open mindedness, you know. What I think the real battle is, you know.
Well, I started, you know, when I do like the bloodline stuff, I start thinking all these people are chosen and they all have great lives. And then I start getting into them and realize that they were all they're not having great lives.
No.
And they're not necessarily chosen for the benefit of them. They're actually forced into positions, either traumatized as children or whatever. They don't have great lives.
No.
Most of these people.
No.
They have horrific lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, over the last 5 years, I've met a few people who've got connections to royalty or have either worked with royalty and got to, you know, been in those circles. And, you know, some of the stories that you hear about the lives that they
horrific.
Lead, absolutely horrific. You know, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. You know, they are seriously traumatized.
So as children, they're going through all that.
Oh, yeah. Then, like raped, as you know, molested and brought into this kind of weird cult. So they are victims. But that's not to see. This is another thing. The mature mind can both say that they're both victims, but also perpetrators, and not necessarily judge them.
Yeah.
But hold them to account. I think that's the difference.
I think from me and Chris's point, why we can see this and why we can sort of accept it, not necessarily forgive them, but see it for what it is.
Understand.
It's because I'll use our dad as a prime example. Our dad had a hard upbringing and what have you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see that behavior in him.
Yeah.
You understand where I'm coming from?
I do, yeah.
The way they were brought up in like the 30s and 40s in two-bedroom houses with like 10 kids in there. That, these weren't good lives. These were trauma from day one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know? So some people can then, if some people in that situation with, I don't know your exact details, but say an abusive father or you know, somebody.
Well, he was more of a shouter and baller. Same thing, though.
That is abuse. That is abuse. You know, and I've got friends and, you know, it, who sometimes downplay some of the trauma that they've gone through. And it is trauma.
But what I'm trying to get at there is, I could accept why he was traumatic, but it doesn't mean to say I'm going to put up with his behaviour.
Exactly.
Likewise for Tony Blair. I can see why he went to two schools where there were known paedophiles, and he was very close to them, wasn't he, Chris? Some of them were his mentors. He sat on the knee, and he's written about this stuff, right?
Four or five paedophiles.
Sorry. There's no way he could have escaped four or five paedophiles.
But it's like an initiation.
Gangsters.
Yeah, and once you're in it, they're in it, aren't they? And then there's
we heard through contact that the moms of some of these kids in these top schools actually are disappointed if their kids aren't RAPED, because it means they're not chosen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back to we did some on I forget which school they were fired, but when they found out that one of the teachers was a paedophile, all the parents went against the fact that he'd been announced as a paedophile.
When he got off with it,
they gave him a standing ovation, if I remember.
Yeah, it's very twisted. But the main point there, I think, that I get from what you're saying, Dom, is there's a difference between forgiveness and understanding.
Yes.
And I don't mean understanding in the, oh, I'm so understanding. I mean understanding literally, I understand why this has happened. I understand how you've been screwed, so you're going to screw them. Now, I'm not going to forgive you, but at least I can understand it.
Well, it obviously switches off that kind of empathetic mind.
Totally
that
does,
means they can make decisions to, say, kill a million people in Iraq, and then they're going to go for Middle East peace.
I mean, a conditioned mind can do pretty much anything. Mm. It can rationalize anything,
which is what we saw in 2020.
Yeah,
when it, en masse for the first time, whatever MK Ultra was pressed, and all these people were controlled, hypnotized, en masse in March 2020, buying pots and pans on a Thursday at 8.
Yeah.
I mean, you think back, you think, did I actually fucking live through that?
I know. Yeah, you did.
I don't know about you, but Christian said he heard his neighbour say, he's not outside.
We had the kids over during the height of lockdown, and they were all playing out on the green when it was, and then the neighbour came out and shouted, Tier 4! Like Tier 4, you know, like telling. The kids came in scared. They're like, what's this guy shouting at us? You know, they were just playing. I think even him, actually, he's, even when I've talked to him since, I sense a certain regret.
Yeah.
You know, I think even the...
He knows he's been hard, doesn't he? He knows he's been
hard. I think so.
Yeah.
I think people are getting that.
Go on, sorry, Chris.
How far would it have to go before you were involved in dragging you out of your house?
Yeah. Yeah.
Say that again.
Chris said, how far would it have gone before he'd have actually turned into a Nazi?
You
know what I mean?
Oh, it's not far.
Yeah.
No, it's a thing, you know, it could have gone.
It's a bit like the Balkan war where they were one week before they were lending each other the lawnmowers, week after they were throwing grenades over the fence. It's that mentality. And one of my neighbours, I mean, I told this story on podcast before, but I remember going out when we were allowed to go out for a walk, although I totally ignored it anyway. He went out having a walk at the same time. And he thought it were quite awake because he used to ask me to send emails. Before we were doing the podcast, they used to send me researching emails, and I got a few hundred people who send these emails to. And he said, oh, put my name down now. I'm into a bit of that. So I sent him emails and that. When this started, I was sending emails about this, 2020, obviously. Mm. And, I disagree with you about this stuff. He said to me, middle of the road, because I went to hug him. Right.
He
fucking lost it. He absolutely lost it. Don't come near me. Blah, 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 this, that, and other. Anyway, after that, I thought, fuck you, I'm not talking to you. Last year, he apologized to me.
Right. Okay.
Which, fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a big thing, isn't it?
Takes a man to apologize.
Yeah. It's a big thing.
A lot of people.
But, I mean, that's why I sort of, you know, for me, I've kind of stopped looking at stuff. I mean, after like 25, 30 years of looking at stuff, I don't look at the details so much anymore. I'm not that interested. That's why with podcasts, it's interesting to hear people's stories. But for me, it's more about where we are as people. And so that's why I sort of bring up these things that that kind of highlight the psychology of people and how we all this stuff that we've talked about. I love it. I love where you're coming from. I feel very, very in sync with where you're coming from. And I just think it's the most important. The battle is really within each of our own psyches and souls and spirits. And it's how we are together now as people, how we relate to each other is much more important than pointing the finger at, is it the Jesuits? Is it the Vatican? Is it this, that?
Jews, is it these?
Is it whatever? You know, it's like, what are you doing? I mean, like we had, oh no, I won't tell that story because it's pretty dark. But, you know, it basically, the story highlights the hypocrisy of some of the truth seekers, you know, who like to point the finger out there, but then do pretty shit behavior themselves, you know. And ultimately that's where it's at for me, is just how
do you find you're sitting there for 4 hours with another person, Jay. Do you find that 4 hour stretch like ticks your conspiratorial box, so you don't feel as desperate to look into
it's not so much that, because most of the conversations I tend to steer into a more of a philosophical thing. I'm not, you know, I mean, Piers Corbyn was different. He gave a presentation, basically.
I haven't watched that one, actually.
I watched the first part. I don't think I watched the second one.
It's more interesting if you want a presentation from Piers Corbyn. You know, there are some good personal bits in there. There are good personal bits in there. I really enjoyed it. I loved him, actually, because I met him a couple of times before that. And I was a bit on the fence, like, you know, because of his brother, and you're a bit like, oh, I don't know, you know, it still seems a bit strange that your brother's the blah, blah, blah. But actually, I've completely warmed to him when we met. And that's been another lesson for me as well, because, you know, Kate Shimarani is another one. They've all been called shills. And then when you meet them, they're not, whatever they're doing that you might disagree or agree with, they're not controlled. Well, they are genuine. They believe what they're saying, you know, and they're lovely. Most of them are just lovely people.
I don't think the system can control each individual. I'm going to 1984 there, where they want to control what you're thinking.
Yeah.
But I think they control the system,
but
not necessarily the individuals within it. The individuals control what the system wants, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, as we saw with the banging pots and pans.
Yeah.
You know, that was a prime example of how, can you imagine somebody in an office somewhere who set that nonsense about.
Yeah.
I mean, but,
yeah. Right, it'd be some ad agency, wouldn't it?
It was one woman who came up with the idea. They applauded the woman who came up with the applauding idea.
Did they get the pants out?
I remember. My nipper were going to school today, and they were allowed to wear red, white. They wanted them to wear red, white, and blue for VE Day.
Oh, right.
And my missus actually said this as a bit of a slip. She said, yes, you can wear red, white, and blue tomorrow to celebrate VE Day. And I went, what? Celebrate murdering a lot of people? And even my daughter, who's 7, burst out laughing.
Yeah.
I know. She went, yeah, mum, what are you talking about? Celebrating murder?
Yeah. Yeah, mum.
Well, if the BBC can put a new encapsulate, what was it? Eric Gill? Is it?
Yeah.
Eric Gill.
Guy tried chiseling it off.
Yeah. But he did come up with some nice fonts, I have to say.
Yeah, he was a font designer, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Yeah, we use them, don't we? Probably don't even realise we're using them.
Yeah.
And do you know what? That's the spell in it, probably.
Maybe. Maybe.
Probably.
That would be a big maybe for me, but...
Yeah, but they're all maybes, aren't they? But there's so many maybes that become too many coincidences, don't there?
Yeah.
And I know...
Yeah. I mean, he was definitely dodgy.
He still can't 100% prove... Even if you've got a load of inconsistencies together, that it's exact science, you know, exact. But
no. we just found out, Jet, that Eric Gilley designed a lot of the war memorials that are dotted around England.
Right.
There's one where I live, so he was involved in that, which I now see as a celebration of constructed death and murder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of good people doing horrible stuff to other human beings, which I think all the world wars and the COVID nonsense were all.
But I mean, that actually wiped so many people out, not just as in everyone thinks it was just working class people, all the aristocracy, all the male lines of the aristocracy got wiped out as well, or a high percentage of them, because their sons had to go and fight. They were all officers, weren't they?
I guess so. I don't know. I wouldn't know the stats on that. I'd be someone who probably assumed it was mostly working class.
Well, the numbers say that it was mostly working, but I'm on about from a aristocratic point of view. Again, I'm not
suffered.
The first people that the German or the British Army would shoot would be an officer, because what they assumed then was that the rest of the army or the rest of the lads in the platoon wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
To the point where the officers used to chop the badges and all that type of stuff off and the pips on the shoulders.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the British officers used to carry I think it were a Webley six-shot handgun, and they didn't wear them, or a belt. They used to have these special belts at the war, and they'd take the belt off and just change it for a normal private's belt.
Right, okay.
I suppose
you can't imagine, can you? You
just more or less imagine. A target, isn't it? No. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, anyway.
Are you a bit of a... Is that one of your special... Or your interests?
I don't know about a special... Interest, yeah. I've got a lot of World War One diaries. Mm. I suppose, it opens another door, because... Talking about, say, vaccinations, when you're reading someone's diary from World War One, it tells you when they had the measles vaccine, for instance, or some kind of smallpox vaccine.
Yeah.
Then 3 or 4 days later, they're all sectioned off in a hut because a load of people in the platoon's gone down with smallpox or some kind of measles or something like that.
Yeah.
So they were actually experimenting on these lads as well, with gas and all sorts of other stuff at Porton Down. Mm. But yeah, we found that, I don't know if you heard you would have heard the episode, it was quite an early one that we did about Spanish flu nonsense, that there's no holiday.
Being linked to, go on.
Well, the fact is that, did it happen or didn't it, or was it as bad as what they said, or wasn't it?
Mm.
But the fact is, there's no monument, for one. You weren't taught about it at school, for another. You know about the bubonic plague, but nobody told you that 50 million or 100 million died of Spanish flu.
Right.
Which I thought that'd be pretty high up on the curriculum. There's no day off. There's no Martyrs' Day for the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Very few books were written at the time. What I'm trying to say is that whereas in 2020, and I've got all this video evidence now, haven't I?
Yeah.
And all these news articles and newspaper stories.
Yeah.
Also, in each village, they've generally a village have got like a whatever a cross with people's names on it who died from that village.
Yeah,
in the war, they haven't got one of them in each village for the Spanish flu.
No.
Which more people apparently died of the Spanish flu than the World War One.
Than in World War One, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not something I've looked at. I don't know much about it.
But anyway, that's what got me on that one, and just daft things like I remember reading one article where. A certain time in the day, they had to fire two belts, a belt of machine gun bullets, to keep the quota up for the orders.
Oh, right, really?
So somebody had signed a contract like the PPE.
Yeah.
To make a certain amount of bullets, for argument's sake, that they had to shoot, or shells and stuff like this.
Yeah.
So the World War One and World War Two were very similar to 2020 in the operational side of it.
Yeah, well, that was encouraged, wasn't it, from a psychological point of view? It was, banding together. All the rhetoric was World War rhetoric, wasn't it? You know.
Yes. Yeah. But So, can you let us know who the next one is?
Yeah, we've
next one.
A couple of days' time, we're going to Glastonbury to meet Sandy Adams. We're going to paint Sandy Adams.
Right.
She's really interesting. She's spent the last 15 odd years looking at Agenda 21, now Agenda 2030.
Well, is it Rosie Carr? She passed away, I think, a few years ago. She was looking at Agenda 21. She was doing talks on
that
10 or 15 years ago. Yeah,
I don't know that name.
That's where I first heard Agenda 21, actually, with Rosie Carr. But she's got like bleach blonde hair or grey hair.
She passed me by that one.
Mm. Yeah.
So Sandy's talking about all that stuff, so that'd be fun. And I suppose what's different is because it's so long, I like to just find out about them as people and where they're coming from in their head, you know, like how do you cope with researching something like that for 15, 20 years, you know, without going mad? Because I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen Sandy Adams yet. I'll have to have a look. Do you recognise
Is that many people? Again, there's so many. No, I don't recognise the name. But like, they get there again. I mentioned Rosie Carter. Jake, and you even know Rosie Carter?
No, I didn't know that. She's in Glastonbury. She got a quite bit of notoriety because she, I think she gave a really good speech at the Glastonbury Council. So,
right. Yes, I do know who you mean now. Yeah. I do know who you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we've got Andrew Bridgen at the end of the month.
Right. He's another shill, obviously.
Well, he's obviously a shill. Yeah.
Destroyed his own life, blah, blah, blah.
See, I don't know. You know, that would be interesting for me because I've tended to, I mean, I'm more interested in people. I'm not really interested so much in all the details, as I've made clear. But obviously, Bridgen, he's going to want to talk about all the practicalities of everything. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, it'll be interesting.
But also, I think he were driven down his path because he had a little kid around the time.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and the jabs were going towards the younger and younger kids. Mm-hmm. And I think I've heard him say that that's what made him stand up was when they were going after the younger kids. So there is an emotional level to what
he... I think he had a couple of taps in those, didn't he? With double taps.
Yeah, I think he did, yeah. Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, he says he was sort of damaged. And then some of the conspiracy like saying, well, he can't even remember what kind he had, so maybe he's making it up. You know, there's always that kind of debate.
Yeah, but would you if you had it done in a pub car park?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. I've met dealers in pub car park.
At that point, did it matter? Did it matter which... You know, which one it was.
Absolutely, yeah.
It didn't really matter whether it was Moderna.
I remember saying to my son who was up visiting, and I said, you can see where this is going, just from watching, you know, going on in the news at the time, just as the jib-jab came out. People are going to, because they were saying, oh, we ain't got many of this. And I said, this is where the jab wars start, where people start arguing over which one they should have.
Yeah.
And he sure as not said, I heard someone arguing about which one they should have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Genius.
Yeah, I remember
evil
that.
Genius, yeah.
Yeah. You should have AstraZeneca because it's got a union jack it's made in Britain.
Talking about it like football.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when they admitted with the AstraZeneca that it was killing people, didn't they? And they just dropped it. Is it AstraZeneca?
AstraZeneca just pulled it, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, it was causing blood clots. Admitted to the blood clots and the myocarditis. I mean, I shouldn't even know what myocarditis is. I never heard until 4 years ago. But I work with a lady who works for, because I live in Cambridge, Jake. She works for AstraZeneca. And I know this is common knowledge, but I didn't realise this till about 6 months ago, that they actually are just a cancer research company. Yeah. And then, funnily enough, they come out with a jib jab, and now cancer rates in youngsters has gone up. I said this to her.
Not just youngsters, Chris.
No, not just youngsters. But the reason I said it to her, because I just read this article about 30-year-olds getting... and she said, but the whatever, you know, they're more diagnosable now than they used to be.
Mm.
But the guys have come up with a jib jab, and now, you'd have to put a lot together.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Although I guess with all these things, they're just huge multinationals all owned by the same.
Well, I think they're seemingly around board. There's different levels, and they've got it at the bottom line. You've got professors or researchers that want funding. Then at the top level, they probably know something else is going on, possibly.
Yeah.
Longer term, because they're at meetings like the World Economic Forum or whatever in a darkened room. Planning an agenda for 50 or 100 years ahead.
But it was never publicised that they didn't take a award offer for coming up with that jab, did they?
Oh, Dame Barbie doll.
Better than they made a Barbie doll of. Yeah, they never took a Barbie doll or took the award actually physically off and said, well.
They'd probably give them more awards.
Yeah. Maybe the award was for what he did.
Yeah, maybe. But loads of them have been knighted and given from AstraZeneca,
or
Vaxatech, as it were called, which is a private business. It weren't. Anyway, there were several sort of entities before it got to AstraZeneca.
Okay.
Weapons they kill. But that was another weird oddity, wasn't it?
Is that what it translates as?
Weapons they kill. That's what it translates to.
I do remember that.
Somebody's writing a script somewhere.
I had a friend who, I think he was, not AstraZeneca, what was the other one? Moderna.
Pfizer, Moderna.
Pfizer, it was Pfizer, yeah. I think
Johnson & Johnson.
He had a friend who worked for Pfizer, and his understanding from what he heard through his mate was that it was depopulation, but not... You could almost argue if you had been generous, that the actual suffering, the deaths might have been an accidental byproduct of what was essentially a depopulation,
sterilization type thing.
Sterilization thing, yeah, which would actually be quite an easy sell, I think, given the brainwashing over climate depopulation, that you could say to a scientist or a group of scientists, well, we're working on this because it's the only solution for humanity. We can't tell everyone that it will sterilize the future generations, but that's what it's going to do. And you could actually get people to go along with that, thinking they were doing the right thing.
Well, there was a professor who would interview.
I'm not saying that again. I'm not saying that is the case. It's just one option.
I think it's feasible. I've said the same thing, Jake, that the sudden deaths, the galloping cancer deaths, are a side effect. That's not part of the planning. That, they're not knocking people off that way to speed up the cull, if you like.
Right.
They want to sterilize people more. It's the next generations are interested.
You think that would sort of make more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Well, it does, because they're always talking about...
It's gone. Bye.
They're always talking about what?
You vanished again.
Do I keep going?
Yeah, just every now and again.
How many people? I don't mind need to get a new shill mic. But they're always talking about how many people are on the planet.
Yeah.
So in the future, we know there's a population collapse coming because people aren't having children like they were.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if they stop me from having children, then this like the whole woke agenda, everything.
Oh God, no one wants kids anymore, do they?
No one wants kids anymore. Kids become a liability, even you've got the women, a lot of the women sort of liberation type of movement are saying, why should just women have kids?
I was talking to a lad at work and he said, it dawned on me the other day, I think he's like 24, I think he is. And he said, I realise that none of me and my cousins are between 20 and 30 odd, none of them have got children.
Mm.
Which is, that's brand new, isn't it? That didn't used to happen.
It didn't used to happen, no.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's been a steady pattern, hasn't it? I mean,
it has been a steady pattern,
Men are just as much a victim of that as women who are told they need to be in the workplace till they're 30, and then they go, shit, I really actually do want to have kids, and they're 35, and they're desperately looking around for a bloke to have kids with, and and then men have also been sort of encouraged to think, just live your life, you don't need to commit, you don't need to get married. I could have gone down that route quite easily, without a bit of persuading, a bit of pressure, and I know a lot of blokes my age who have gone down that route and they don't have families and that, and I think that is part of the agenda.
Mm.
Definitely.
Well, the social engineering on that side of it, I think it started probably post-war, World War II.
Yeah.
After the boom, we were getting, and people think, well, they're scared of all of us goyim turning on the controllers. I think it's more; they've already got control of us, but I don't think they're worried about that. They probably don't need us anymore.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. It starts getting very
It gets dark, doesn't it? Yeah, but also, our age. If you notice, it's out at like me. I'm 55. Chris is 51 this time, aren't you? Yeah, I don't know how old you are, Jake, but we get it of a similar age. And it's like, we're like the last of the summer wine talking about this. Because a lot of the younger people aren't doing what we're doing, starting podcasts up.
Well, it is, it's very much a kind of 40 upwards movement, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's very few young people, or at least, well, there has not, certainly visibly there isn't. I don't know. I have heard a few things that there is a sort of, there is a tide turning in young people, but it's a slightly different, front. It's a different, it's not quite the same. They're kind of maybe doing their own thing.
Well, I suppose for people our age, we've looked back and we've lived our lives. We've gone on holidays and enjoyed ourselves with his friends. And when you're in your 20s, that's what you want to do, don't you?
Well, there's that as well, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want life getting in the way.
But also the agenda's making the younger end looking at the future, saying, you're not going to be able to earn enough money to do anything. They're showing them a lot of doom and gloom, especially in their Instagram world, if you like.
Oh, it's no wonder there's so much mental illness.
What do you think, Jake, about AI-produced art, out of interest?
I'm not worried about AI. I mean, for me personally, it's not a problem because I'm very specifically about handcrafted stuff. You know, it's like a painting.
Yes, I mean.
Sort of not mimicable with AI. But even AI generally, like, so I do music as well, and, you know, some of the AI music that you can create is just bonkers. I mean, you know, and quite moving as well in a way. But I think what AI is going to do is speed up the rejection of the banal. That's how I put it. So, you know, what's not of good quality will become so widespread that people will crave some real.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's already getting to that point, isn't it?
Go,
you know,
full circle.
Go full circle. Yeah.
Like the High Street Butcher. It'll go full circle.
Yeah.
We'll lose it and then we'll want it back again.
Yeah.
I got a review on one of my sculptures the other day, and it said, you can tell it's not 3D printed. It looks really authentic and handmade. Yeah, I thought, bloody hell, have we reached a point where someone's going to mention it, though?
That's the benchmark, isn't it? That's the benchmark, yeah.
I mean, it's a compliment, but so I didn't think it'd reach that point so quick.
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite sort of, you know, I don't get fixed. I mean, even with the, you know, I don't know why this is connected in my brain, but the kind of, there's this debate about white replacement and, you know, the Islamization of Europe, you know, and races all becoming kind of merged as one. And you know, I can understand, like, part of me thinks, yeah, there's something to be said for, like, maintaining indigenous culture and, you know, I feel that.
I think that ship sailed, though.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, I always use the example, like, you know, if the people who sort of are promoting mass immigration, would they say the same about some little Polynesian island? You know, would they accept that culture just being destroyed in the same way? But the point I was actually making, I don't know why this relates to AI, but I suppose the point is that everything finds its natural kind of balance. And as we said earlier, everything is natural. And sometimes I suppose we can get caught up in these kind of micro problems, and maybe on a vast scale of consciousness, these things are micro problems. You know, I don't know, you know, maybe if we all became sort of a kind of mid brown, you know, like,
we
have
mid brown,
like, we are. Well, you're already there, aren't you? So, like, but, you know, if the dark and the light sort of just became, I don't know, is that a problem really on, like, esoteric kind of spiritual consciousness level? I don't know.
I think the problem is, for me, if I'm honest, Jake, is there's clearly an agenda and a contrived agenda, because it's happening everywhere in the world at the same time.
Sure.
So there is an issue. If it was all actually happening in natural, then it wouldn't be wouldn't be an issue, would it?
For sure.
There's something odd going on. There's some weird agenda going on there.
Yeah.
I had an argument with my mate ages ago about too many black people in adverts.
And oh, God, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
I'm of mixed, and he wasn't. Yeah. But he got annoyed with me. But I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't reflect where we live, you know. You say one in 10 people, about everyone. And my other mate who's in advertising said, he's in advertising, and he said, yeah, we struggle now because we need so many mixed race couples. We struggle to find the half black child.
Yeah.
We won't qualify anymore, Chris.
I know. We could have had a right career.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man. Well, we haven't, no, I'm not going to sound like, we haven't got a telly, but we do watch stuff with my son on the computer, you know, like, he likes Bake Off and stuff. So the adverts come on, I'm just like sitting there going, what the? No, come on. It's like everyone is like, where's the white person? You know,
it's
like
weird, isn't it? But it's so obvious and weird.
It's messing with kids' heads because you know, I mean, yeah, it might be like that in some areas in London, but
is it really, again, going back to, do we really need that? We saw it back of a bus, me and my wife driving into Halifax the other day. I forget what advert it was, but it was kissing. And I'm thinking,
we have to fill in the blank then. I don't know what he was kissing.
Yeah, the black target.
Sorry, two ladies were kissing, right?
All right,
on back of a bus. Right.
I don't want to see a guy and a woman kissing.
No, exactly. But what I'm trying to say is that real? I mean, what the advertising makes out is all of these things, that's normal. That is just a normal thing.
Yeah.
I only mentioned the black people in adverts yesterday, Chris, to my missus.
Well, I mentioned yesterday about the lesbian thing being thrown down your throat.
And I don't watch TV. These were YouTube adverts, and they come on one after another. And every one of them, and they didn't even look like they should be together. So there were a black woman and a white guy, right? And she looked about 80 and he looked about 40. It's like, oh,
you've been ageist, fat. That was funny, wasn't it? I told you over there, Jay, they my missus, she failed diversity training twice at work.
Right.
And she's from South London. All her best friends are black. And she married a half
dark. Oh, that old chestnut.
She married a half dark, you being me. But
is she white?
Yeah, but she can't pass diversity training.
Right. Yeah. It's insane, isn't it? I mean, I watched that, you know, Andrew Gold.
Heretics, is it?
Heretics.
I don't watch it, but I know who he is.
I saw that one. Yeah, I mean, I don't resonate with a lot of what he's saying, but he does some good stuff. And he had that, what's her name? Ebi Aganuko or something. She a black female football player.
Yeah, it was causing a bit of a... Was she calling Ian Wright out at football?
Oh, God, she made such a fool of herself.
That's where it's going, though, isn't it?
He was talking about DEI and, you know... Because Andrew Gold, white, middle class, I think he's Jewish.
He's Jewish, yeah.
And he was saying he'd been rejected because he'd been told that some of his ideas had been rejected by the BBC because they couldn't have a white, middle class guy fronting... You know, straight white middle class guy fronting. They needed someone from a minority. So he was telling her this, and she couldn't handle it. You know, because she's like telling her story about how she'd been suffering from, and she couldn't accept that he might also have experienced the same kind of thing. You know, And so it's the sort of victim mentality, isn't it?
Don't jump on my persecution.
Jump on my persecution. Exactly. Yeah, and she lost it, and she was so illogical. You know, she was saying things like, well, we need DEI to help people, and then he sort of would counter that. Well, does that mean you got your position because you don't deserve it? No, I got it. I deserve it. Yeah. But other people, you know, they need help. I mean, it's just she was tied up in knots. And
to be fair, if I were black in a workplace, like an office environment, I'd milk it.
I'm sure people did, don't they?
Yeah. All right, we're talking of milking it. We're done. We're coming up to an hour and a half.
Am I milked?
Yeah, we're milked, man. But this time anyway, Jake. Yeah.
Oh, it's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I've really, really enjoyed. It's lovely when I just love openness, and I just love being able to talk about anything without the kind of emotional stuff being dumped on it. And I really get that feeling from you too. So I really appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah,
well, great. Thanks.
You're going to be able to do that, aren't you? Otherwise, it's bloody pointless.
Yeah, but you say that, but it's not as common as you
I know. But if you look behind Chris there, it's a sheep farm. And just move over to the side a bit, Chris. It says, don't believe with light. And that really sums it up. If you're not willing to accept that you're going to be wrong, what's the point of looking at anything?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the amount of times that you've been wrong, going back like through the last 20 or 30 years of thinking something, then 2 years later you go, bollocks.
Well, you could actually bring in a, like I make sculptures, Jake, you're a painter. You learn more from screwing things up than getting them right.
100%. Yeah. And I tell that to my son, you know, he gets really cautious about drawing. I say, you have to just put the mark on the
paper
and you throw it away.
Yeah. And also some of your mistakes turn into the best bits.
And that as well. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, just having a bit of fun and just throwing stuff out there.
Yeah.
And that's really what I get from you. It's brilliant. Like, just let's just throw stuff around, talk about it, and just enjoy the possibilities. You know, we don't need to protect. I think, just quickly going back to why my friend who was questioning the chemtrail thing, why I think she got such vitriolic sort of responses was because I actually think people, they're afraid of losing a comrade. You know, they're afraid of losing someone on their side. And I think we just need to let go of that mentality.
I know people who are ill that won't try things, right, for fear it's going to make them ill.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Which there's it's sort of like counterproductive or contradictive where, and I know the mentality because when I was ill, I was scared of becoming more ill by trying something that, and so I know that, and that is the same sort of mentality that we've got. We're scared, humanity is scared of losing scared of losing. It's fear of death, really. Ultimately. If you take it right back to the ultimate point. So
they're scared of it not being in the club. You need to be in the right club.
Yeah.
Isn't this all about being the odd one out?
Too right.
Well, you think so. You think so.
This is about being the odd one out and thinking 2 years later, bloody hell, look how far I've come.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah, let's just have fun.
Yeah, along the way. All right, then. Thanks, Jake.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tom. Thanks,
Ben. Thanks a lot, Jake. Well, great. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you're going to tune into part two, we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Come on, Jake.
Brilliant. Bye.